I had a great opportunity to meet up front and personal Marshall Masters about a week or so ago in Boulder, Colorado, as we were taping our Beyond Belief television shows. And Marshall was telling me about Planet X. And in a moment, we will talk with him about Planet X forecast and much more on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Marshall Masters with us. And of course, a long time ago in a far off place, when I started reading the 12th Planet and Zechariah Sitchin's Earth Chronicle books, talking about the Anunnaki, Planet X, it was a riveting, fascinating subject, but I'm not sure I really said to myself, you know, is there really another planet in the solar system? Does it come around every 3,600 years? Well, since then we've talked to a few experts, but Marshall Masters has got it down to a science, and what he's going to tell you tonight will rivet you, let me tell you, because he did that to me in Boulder when we were taping our Beyond Belief show. Marshall Masters, author, publisher, internet radio host, founder of Your Own World Books. He's a former CNN Science Features news producer and also noted author. Marshall Masters, back on Coast to Coast. Hello there. Good to see you again.
Good to see you, George. And man, that was an amazing time at Boulder. You are an old soul.
How old am I?
Well, I think you've had many lives. I think you've been there, seen it, done it, and bought the T-shirts.
Marshall, you were telling me some things there that were just absolutely astounding about Planet X. So let's dive right into it. We'll take calls next hour with you. Planet X, a number of people have talked about it, that it's an extra planet in the solar system. You have your own thoughts. It's not only one planet. There are two others associated, plus a brown dwarf star. Lots of people have said we're in a binary star system. Explain what that means, first of all.
Okay. What we have in a binary star system means our sun has a much smaller companion, and that is a brown dwarf star. And brown dwarfs are actually very common stars out in our galaxy. They're very difficult to see because they don't have the same amount of mass as our sun, so they ignite, but then they can't maintain that nuclear furnace, so to speak. The result is they're incredibly difficult to spot. They can be detected with infrared at distance, but they really have to get up close and personal, so to speak, before we're going to see them, because they're shrouded by this iron oxide dust field. And what we call it the Planet X system, and Planet X also, you folks have probably heard the terms Nibiru, Destroyer, Red Planet, Dark Star. These are all names that are talking about the same thing, because there's a tremendous amount of folklore about this planet. There's a lot of history about it.
There sure is.
A lot of races. Yes, and the, you know, right now, what we have come defined in our book, Being in It for the Species, is that it's what you would call a constellation, a mini constellation within our own system. And it's in a long period orbit of 3,600 years. Now, there's a real important distinction there. That's 3,600 lunar years, all right? In solar years, our Gregorian Western calendar, it's actually 3,548 years. And
so pretty close, though, to Sitchin's 3,600 years.
Very close. You know, what happened was Sitchin just did a very literal translation. Now, the interesting thing is the lunar calendar, and today, you know, if you're in the Middle East, you know, the Hebrew tradition has a lunar calendar. Islam has a lunar calendar. The Mayans had a lunar calendar. The Sumerians had a lunar calendar. This is the oldest form. And what you learn in Sitchin's book, The Lost Book of Enki, and this is an autobiography of Lord Enki, from whose loins our species was actually created. He was the one who developed the very first lunar calendar. And it works exactly the same thing as the Mayans and the Sumerians and the ones we use today. Lord Enki's calendar was 12 lunar cycles divided into just two seasons, summer and winter. And when you take from December 21, 2012, and you backtrack using a lunar calendar calculation, it is a spot-on fit for the last flyby of this system, which was the 10 plagues of Hextus.
And every time the planet and, I guess, the two related planets seem to come around, there's always some kind of havoc and catastrophe, isn't there?
Absolutely. And we really narrowed it down to best case scenario, worst case scenario. And this system comes up. Right now, it's directly behind the sun. And when we see it come out from behind the sun, that'll be about the 130 position. And when we see it start to come out, that's when, you know, we're going to be in deep kimchi.
Now, we're 93 million miles away from the sun, Marshall. How far away do you believe this planet X is behind the sun on the other side?
I believe at this time it is in what's called conjunction, which means it's beyond our orbit on the opposite side of the sun, and I believe it's beyond the orbit of Jupiter. And what it's doing right now is it's slowing because it's arcing in its orbit to its point of perihelion, which is the closest distance to the sun. Then what happens is when it reaches that point, it's like, you know, the whip ride at the amusement park that you go around those two big turnstiles at one end. When you hit that turnstile, whoop, you go right around. Same thing, it's going to whip right around, and then it's going to start accelerating very quickly. And it will cross over Earth's orbit and then head south into what's called its aphelion leg. That's, in other words, it's going way back out to the distant reaches of our system. Now, in a best-case scenario, when this system is in its aphelion leg and crosses Earth's orbit, if we are on the opposite side of the sun, that's the best-case scenario, and the last best-case scenario was the 10 plagues of Exodus. However, when it is on our side of the sun, that's the worst-case scenario, and the last time that happened was the deluge, or Noah's flood. Now, in 2008, government whistleblower Bob Dean on Project Camelot predicted through his sources that this was going to be a worst-case scenario, that we would be on the same side of the sun. And our findings are consistent with his predictions. So this is going to be a rough ride.
Are you finding, Marshall, that more and more people are coming onto this Planet X bandwagon now that it does exist?
Yes. The topic has really revitalized quite a bit. You know, December 21, 2012 was really a pump, and it got a lot of people interested, but it was really a non-event. And the reason why was that everything that happened prior to December 21, 2012 was nothing more than speculation. That was it. Everybody was pulling theories out of the air. But now, and we've just published an article on our website at yowza.com about this, we now realize what the Mayans were looking for on December 21, 2012 was a celestial alignment that would tell them that now we're going to just explode upwards. And this is consistent with a lot of other things. You know, we've got in a normal year, relatively speaking.
Hold on right there, Marshall. We're going to take this break, and I want you to get this full thought in when we come back. We're talking about a cluster, Planet X, two other planets, and then a brown dwarf, which is a binary twin to our own sun. It's an amazing story. You've heard some of it before. You're getting it all tonight with Marshall Masters. Okay, welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you, Marshall Masters as well. Marshall, you were getting into some more aspects of this planetary cluster. And also, let me ask you before you get into it, do you believe that the Anunnaki, those who apparently were on Nibiru, one of the three planets in this cluster, are still around? Or, you know, it's been 3,600 years. Who knows what's happened to them?
Well, these are very long-lived people. What we call a 3,600 lunar year orbit they call one char. So they're very, very long-lived, and you bet they're coming back, and they're going to be, well, it's like Vinny and the boys coming to collect the VIG.
Yeah.
It's not going to be fun.
Well, it's going to affect us, and it's going to affect us in a big way. Now, we are seeing things happen now, though, aren't we?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, just before we went to the break, I wanted to mention, in an average year, for example, with volcanoes, you're going to have 25 active volcanoes. And they get active, and then they go off, and they go on and go off. So every month, typically, there would be a handful of active volcanoes. Right now, we got 40 active volcanoes, last count, 34 of which are on the Ring of Fire.
What does that mean?
And it means things are really building up.
Okay.
And one of the things we, you know, we have a projection in our book, Being in It for the Species, as what we call the Winter of Ash, which will be the harbinger event that tells us we have entered into the catastrophic timeline. And what that's going to be is that we're going to have a lot of volcanic eruptions all over the western side of the Ring of Fire. And this is going to have profound implications economically and politically. Economically, there's going to be a lot of farmlands devastated. So what we're going to see in the United States is food that is importing here from South America, China, and other places, is now going to be going to that area because it'll command a higher price. So we're going to see higher prices here in spotty shelves. In terms of our ability to project power in that region of the world, we're going to be really hampered because all of this ash that's in the sky is going to really impact us. Our primary means of projecting power is with land-based bombers and aircraft carriers. Well, jet engines and ash do not do well together.
Mm, that's right.
On the other hand, the Chinese and the Russians follow a different strategic strategy where they rely more on submarines and missile cruisers, which can operate in that environment very well. So we are going to see some very heavy political shifts during that time.
Some balance of power then.
Absolutely. And this will be something that is, it's a harbinger event to really tell people, all right, now is the time to get off the dime and start doing something. And if, you know, people can just ignore it if they will. Another thing I'm concerned about, because we're also seeing increased seismicity along the Ring of Fire, is all it takes is one more good shake and Fukushima is going to unleash something.
Well, and others, too. I mean, there's more than just Fukushima. There are nuclear power plants located on Earth, on quake faults all over this planet.
Absolutely. You know, Matthew Stein and I were talking about it. Matthew, his concern is we could have 140 Fukushimas here in this country because we've got all these, you know, legacy tea kettle-style nuclear reactors, and fine, they can scram the reactors, but they got to keep the cores cool. And if you lose the ability to pump the water to do that, then these things are all going to, you know, we're just going to have a whole bunch of Fukushima issues. So you're absolutely right. I look at the scope of the industrial accidents. It's bad enough for the natural disasters, but what's going to turbocharge this is going to be nuclear and fracking. And I look at fracking areas. One of the things that's really sad for me, I used to be able to tell folks years ago that were in New York, I'd say, well, you know, head towards central Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania has nuclear on its far western and far eastern borders.
There's no place to go, Marshall.
There's no place. Really, there's very few. The number of places to go when I'm doing relocation analysis for people is really, really shrinking, George, and it's awful. And I see areas that would be incredibly survivable were it not for these industrial threats.
Marshall, next week I'm doing a show on end times prophecy. I'm kind of obsessed with that. And, you know, we're going to look at a number of different things. And this particular guest will be talking about the trumpets. There's supposed to be seven trumpets that sound. And by the time we get to the seventh, that's it. It's toast time. It's apocalypse time. But yep. when I look at the things you've talked about with real science mixed in, and it does tie into end times prophecy, something big is going to happen, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, over the years, I look at, there's a lot of folklore. There's a lot of ancient wisdom texts. But also I see more and more correlations in the Bible itself. And almost to the point, I really am looking at the Bible as a Planet X preparatory. And there, it just again and again, you find all of this in all different kinds of sources. And so to ignore it is at our peril. On the other hand, my belief about prophecy and prediction is be aware of it, but don't live in expectation of it. If you're aware of it, then when you do see a pattern forming, you know to take action. And that is what is really, really important. And I think that's, personally, I have now, you know, for years, mea culpa, I said there was no correlation, no direct link between the Mayan calendar and Planet X. But now what we have discovered in our current research is that is exactly what the Mayans were looking for on December 21, 2012, was a harbinger celestial alignment that would tell them it's coming back and it's going to hurt.
Will astronomers be able to physically see the cluster, Planet X, and the other two little planets?
Well, I mean, they already see it. The problem is that they can't talk about it.
Well, yeah. what about amateur astronomers? Why aren't they telling us about this? Because they're normally pretty good about this.
Well, actually, we get inundated with pictures on a daily basis of people sending us photographs, and there's an awful lot of that. But this system is in conjunction. Right now, it's directly behind the sun. Now, in one of my last videos, what we actually came across was buoys that were maintained by NOAA, one in the Gulf of Alaska, one in the Gulf of Mexico, and these buoys captured images of the three planets, the major planets, in the Planet X system, which are Helion, Arbota, and Nibiru. And on one day, we had simultaneous observations of the same planet by these two different buoys. Now, that is a very credible source. And in this case, they were very close to the sun. That's also that's what makes it difficult to observe it, George, because it's, you know, it's very close. It's not like it's way off out somewhere else. And there's only limited times. It's just, you know, around sunrise, around sunset. Now, that being said, I have a video up that is called NBC News Reports Nibiru. Huh. Now, this was actually back in January 14 of 2014. It was a KCRA Sacramento news helicopter pre-dawn takeoff. It was just one of those right place at the right time things. And it was interesting because it was a live feed coming in from the helicopter, and the people and the host anchors were just puzzling because what they were seeing was an eclipse of Venus eclipsing Nibiru, where Venus was directly in front of us, so that what we're seeing is the night side of it. But Nibiru was on the opposite side of the sun, which means we're seeing the daylight side of it. And it was very clear that you could see Venus eclipsing Nibiru. And the news anchors, they had a weatherman there. And the guy's going, it's a planet, it's a planet, it's a planet, it's a planet. They couldn't figure it out. And I posted that video on April 22nd, and it's already gotten 186,000 views. And so we're seeing this, but also there's just an awful lot of suppression. If you go back and look at the history of Planet X reporting by mainstream astronomers and by the media, it was phenomenal. And then all of a sudden in the early 90s, it was like somebody threw a switch, because Robert H. Harrington, chief astronomer of the U.S. Naval Observatory in Washington wrote a brilliant paper on that, on Planet X and its location. He actually had a custom telescope constructed, sent to United States Observatory in New Zealand, which was operating at that time. The plates were taken. All of that film was then sent to NASA, and it was buried. That was it. Nobody saw it again. But I think what really got him in trouble was he gave a television interview to Zachariah Sitchin, which you mentioned at the top. And so all of that together, he died a very, very strange, mysterious death. There are many believe that he was assassinated for his work on Planet X.
Hmm.
Now, he's not the only astronomer that talked about it. There was Carlos Muñoz Ferrada, a famous Chilean astronomer, and he was the first to talk about it in 1940.
Remarkable.
Absolutely. And he called it Red Planet, and he, at that time, said it is a planet with a dark star companion.
What about the people like Nazi leader Mark Hazelwood, people who years ago talked about a Planet X as well?
Well, you know, that was back in 2003 with Leader and Hazelwood, and they created a panic, which was baseless, all right? And we reported, we called it Zeta hysteria, and it was Zeta hysteria. And as, it was so upsetting at the time, Zachariah Sitchin contacted me directly and gave me an interview for Yowza.com. We have an exclusive interview with him on that, because in 2003, we didn't see any basis whatsoever. You know, Nancy's predictions are channeled
through the Zetas
by impression. So, I mean, there's really no way to validate what she's doing. Hazelwood admitted he doesn't do any original work, and he just lists material, and he lifted a lot of material from Nancy in a book called Blindsided, and that was a terrible time for us because we had so many people writing us, and they were just in a total panic. Do I sell my house? Do I evacuate? What do I do? And it was gut-wrenching for us.
It was like
a very bad time.
Marshall, it was like people following Harold Camping, who's dead now, who claimed a few years ago that, you know, this was the rapture and all these people were going to be taken. So they emptied their bank accounts and their savings accounts. And you know what? When the day came, the money was gone, but they were still here.
Yeah. And, you know, this is something that, you know, that's the reason why I consistently tell people the thing about prophecies, predictions, forecasts is you keep them in mind, but you don't live in expectation of them. What you do is if you keep them in mind, then you're doing your homework. You're tracking the trends. You're seeing what's coming up. And that's one of the reasons why, yes, after December 21, 2012, actually, with Nancy Leader's Zeta hysteria scare in 2003, that killed interest for a while. Then the topic regenerated because people are trying to understand what's happening, and Planet X explains it.
It's pretty strong right now.
It's very strong right now. We're seeing a lot of growth coming back, and I think what I find really encouraging about it is people are looking for integrity. It's gone beyond the, you know, sitting around the campfire telling ghost stories kind of fun thing to people are seeing things that are really, really troubling them. They're looking at a wide range of things. They're going, what is this with Jade Helm 15? Why is it all of a sudden Utah and Texas are now enemy states? Why are they sneaking in at night practicing to see how they can bust down the doors? Why are we having all of this geoengineering that's going on?
Well, you know, there's more drama now, Marshall, in real-life episodes than there were in the past, you know, when people would call this program and make things up and you know, which was somewhat humorous and entertaining, but things have changed.
It's getting real, George. It is getting real. And,
You know, we track all of the trends on a daily basis, my research team, and, you know, and I thank God for them every day. I have such wonderful people helping me with what I do, and they do it for love. And just amazing volunteers. We track all these trends, and all of them are, you know, it just upticks in the wrong direction. The one that really is bothering me the most right now is what we're seeing with meteors. And we continue
lots of meteors.
Lots of meteors, and particularly what we call multi-state or multi-country. And this is one. In the other categories, we've seen fluctuations, a little bit up, a little bit down, although the overall trend continues to accelerate. But in these big ones, we're seeing a different pattern. And what this is leading us to believe is that we are passing through successive bands of the Nemesis system. So these are the outermost bands where we're, you know, we're passing through the rocks that it's flinging off. That's a real problem. It's, you know, it's coming in, and it's, you know, it's kind of like a parade. You got the guys with the trumpets coming, and then you have the elephants, and then afterwards, whatever. We're seeing this advance of all of these meteors, and it's only a matter of time before we're going to have an impact event that is really going to be serious.
Yeah,
you know, Chelyabinsk, if that had happened, that thing detonated, releasing 30 Hiroshima bombs of energy. Imagine Chelyabinsk going off over London or Paris.
There would be no more London or Paris, that's for sure. Marshall, we're going to come back and take some phone calls with you in our final hour on Coast to Coast AM. Planet X, that's what we're talking about this hour with Marshall Masters. Next hour, of course, we're going to talk about the Flat Earth Theory and some other incredible stories for you. And so we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And it, you know, seems fitting that we talk about storable food for the future, because who knows what's going to happen anymore. And you might as well be ready for the unexpected economic situations, weather problems, you name it. Welcome back. Marshall Masters with us. We'll take your calls. Marshall, droughts, California droughts. Some people claim it's weather manipulation that's causing it. Would you believe that perhaps Planet X and the cluster might be causing some of it too?
I think that if it's doing, it's a very minor role. I really find the work of Dane Wigington
yeah.
to be stellar. I mean, he's one of my heroes. And what I can tell you is that what they've done with weather modification, chemtrails, is they have altered the jet stream. Now, I lived in San Francisco for a couple of years, and the old expression, the coldest winter I ever had was a summer in San Francisco, was right, because during the summer, the jet stream would come down the Pacific and then take a turn and go right through where the Golden Gate Bridge is at, and then it would just keep heading towards the east, and that's what brought all the rain and the nice weather. Well, what they've done with all of this geoengineering is that the jet stream now dips down a little bit, then dips up over British Columbia, and then coming down into the Midwest. Now, I have reports from people who are in British Columbia, and they tell me now in the winters there, where they would normally expect 4 to 6 feet of snow, they don't get any snow. They just get occasional rain. Consequently, shallow wells are running dry, and salmon runs are off 25%, which is really impacting the local economy. But I have seen this for myself, because I live here in Sparks, which is in the Reno area, and not far over to the west of me is Truckee, California. Now, Truckee is another one of those places that gets 4 to 6 feet of snow. Well, I've been out there when there should be 6 feet of snow, and I remember this one night clearly. It was a long stretch of road. There was nobody on it. I parked the car right in the center of the road, mm-hmm. turned off the engine, put on the bright lights, and there's all these stakes on both sides of the road that the snow truck operators use that have reflectors, and it was this eerie, like, UFO kind of landing strip. And this was
no
when
snow.
No snow. No snow. And they're, you know, so what they've done, but you look in the Midwest and the weather's bizarre. They're getting wet snow.
Yep.
All right. All of this nonsense. California, has, they have just simply, you know, they're moving the moisture over so that Cargill and these other multinationals with their big monocrops out there in the Midwest are going to have the water. And what they've done is basically thrown California to the wolves. And you look in Central Valley right now, and we're going to start seeing, you know, we're going to start seeing the impact of this in the grocery store. They got farmers are making more money by, frankly, selling their water rights than growing crops. And the governor there has, for the first time in the history of the state, he was standing where they actually measured the snow, and he was standing on ground, should have been 4 to 6 feet of snow, and it was just nothing but brown grass underneath him, and that's where he signed an order, you know, restrictions on water use.
But you think this is Planet X's cause?
Well, you know, it could be in part. It could be that what the elites are wanting to do is trigger a mini ice age in advance of this, because this is going to be a hot flyby. And so that could be what they want to do. But I will say this, and I'll say it for the first time publicly. In 1999, when I started Yowza.com, we first went live in December of 99. And at that time, a former Army intelligence officer, John Maynard, was actually the fellow that helped me set it up. And he gave me the ground rules of how to do this, how to push the edge of the envelope without getting creamed. And one of those rules in 1999, he was point blank. He said, Marshall, if you report on chemtrails, you're going to wind up in an unmarked grave. Point blank.
And he was serious about that.
Absolutely. This man ran the East Africa desk for the IMF. Okay, He knew his stuff, and he just said, you don't talk about it, and I didn't. And now, you know, everyone's talking because, you know, it's up there and it's persistent, and yet people are being taken in by this delusion that they say, well, it's, you know, condensation. Well, excuse me. All of our commercial jets, military jets, are using high bypass fan engines. And they don't do that. And since when do our jets, our commercial jets, fly perfect tic-tac-toe patterns up in the sky, laying these, you know, chemtrail streams that hang up there for hours and hours and hours? So it really happens. I will say this, over the years, you know, I've always kind of was keeping my pulse on it and see if people were talking. You know, if you're in a complex, you go to the jacuzzi, you kind of talk with people. Now when I say, you know, when I mention chemtrails, I don't get, oh boy, you're one of those. Everybody's talking about
they've
it.
All, they've all seen worried. It. They've all
yeah.
seen it.
People are seeing it. And these chemtrail jets, one of the things, you know, this pilot is, he was with American Airlines. He was a 777 pilot, very proficient, decorated Vietnam veteran, helicopter pilot. He's now living in Central America. And it just really infuriated him because he said that he was using his computer plugged into the avionics system on his 777, which is very sophisticated, because he's saying, we're watching these guys spraying beneath us. And what really made him mad was that they were down there on their own air control system. No transponders. So in other words, there was nothing, you know, you have collision avoidance systems. And the collision avoidance systems rely on recognized transponder frequencies. Well, these jets that are chemtrail spraying, they are on their own system. If you look at a stack at high altitude, at the highest altitude you have military, they're on their own system. Then beneath them is commercial jet traffic that, you know, folks like you and I fly back and forth on. And then below that is this whole other system of jets that are doing the chemtrail spraying, and they have their own traffic control system. it's completely separated from everybody else. This is very sophisticated. This is very sophisticated. When they load these chemicals, they're putting a toxic witch's brew into these aircraft. And when they're loading the tanks for spraying, the guys that are doing that, the ground crews, have to wear full hazmat outfits.
Yeah, they don't want to breathe that in. Marshall, let's take some calls here for you. They're lining up. Let's go to Sean, truck driving in Georgia. Welcome to the program, Sean. You're on the air with us.
Hey, how's it going, George?
Good.
Long time no hear.
Well, thank you, sir.
I hear you on the radio, but anyway.
Yes,
I was wanting to ask about the deluge that your guest was speaking of, the NOAA-type event. Long story short, I just want to know, is it going to be like the whole world flooded, or, I mean, are we going to be able to go to higher ground, or what is it you're thinking?
How bad's it going to be, Marshall?
This is going to be a bad flyby. We're looking at a huge die-off of the race, the species. We're going to have a pole shift event with this one.
All right, let's say about 7 billion people on the planet. What are you anticipating here?
Let me put it to you this way. The Georgia Guidestones, the first commandment of the Georgia Guidestones is keep humanity under a half a billion in perpetual balance with nature. It doesn't say how we get there. Planet X is how we get there. So essentially, 1 in 7 survive.
In one swoop.
Over a protracted period of time. Initially, the major events, we're going to have impact events that are going to cause huge tsunamis. These are going to slam all of the major coastlines. And most of humanity lives along the coastlines. So we're in the initial events, it's really going to be bad. We're going to lose a lot of lives right there and then. But then after that, we're going to have another series of things that are going to be difficult. However, in the long run, and I'm seeing a tribulation period of about 7 to 10 years altogether, once we get past the initial events, the big killers are going to be disease and despair.
Can Planet X knock out the power system, the grid? Would it have that kind of an effect?
Absolutely. The grid's going to go down.
All right, if the grid goes down, millions will die just from that alone.
Absolutely, and what really troubles me and other researchers like Matt Stein is that you have all these nuclear reactors. And you know, the thing, what they didn't tell the public, the reason why Fukushima was a problem was not because they lost the power generators. What happened was it was the water pumps, okay? And all of the water pumps that were pumping water into the plant to cool the reactors were at sea level, and they were all lost. That was the reason why it popped. And as a matter of fact, they lost pumps at 3 other plants, and 1 other plant was reduced to just 1 working pump. And if that had failed, then we would have had 2.
That was a problem. So let's imagine we have a major power outage. The generators no longer function. You've got meltdowns at every nuclear power plant.
Horrific. I mean, it's such a dark possibility. It's really hard to get my head around it. I mean, I look at all of these industrial accidents that are there, and it just makes me wonder, is the purpose of all this to ensure the maximum dieback of the human species? Because it's sure, if you look at that, you look at GMO foods, that stuff is pure poison. It's going to take out people's lower intestinal tracts when all they can live on is that stuff, and that's where your immune system is. Then you look at fracking. Fracking, the well casings in a fracking well are designed with a 30-year lifespan. About 3 to 5% fail when the well is actually drilled. But what happens in all of these heavy fracking sites when the New Madrid pops? I mean, when the New Madrid pops, we're going to feel it everywhere. That means all of these fracking wells, their casings are going to fracture, and this toxic witch's brew of chemicals that they've used to make these wells operational is going to work up. It's brown grass, poisoned water in areas that would otherwise sustain life for survivors.
I'll be in St. Louis when that happens, Marshall, so I'll get it just as bad as I would here in California if the San Andreas went.
Yeah, yeah. That's you're in St. Louis. I wouldn't be there, George.
Let's go to Jeff in Ferguson, Missouri, east of the Rockies. Jeffrey, go ahead.
Good evening. Long time.
You too, Jeff. How are things in Ferguson right now? By the way,
Pretty settled here. Pretty settled, but there's always going to be the few people still around doing the little crazy stuff.
Well, let's hope not this summer. But go ahead with your question,
Mr. Masters. Not to discount your theories or information about Planet X and or Nerebru, but over the years between Art Bell and George Norrie, there's been over dozens of guests that's predicted the coming of this event, and it's come and gone. Why should we consider yours any more accurate than the other ones?
Good question. Marshall Fair.
Well, first off, read my website and you can follow our work. We put it there. We're a science-based organization. We are following the trends. And in the final analysis, though, it's your life. And you need to do your homework. You need to ask the critical questions. Why am I seeing the crazy things that are happening? And when you do that, you know, that is really important. But, you know, also another thing is that there is a tremendous amount of disinformation being planted into this topic. This is not like, you know, if you are out there doing, you know, growing roses or crochet or whatever, who's going to bother with that? But I will tell you, and I see this all the time, is that these are very slick, very well-paid teams of disinformation operatives. The heaviest concentration comes out of the Crown, which is the city-state in London. But also we see this kind of suppression and manipulation coming out of the Vatican. Our book, all right, that was translated into the Italian language and was popular throughout the country in Italy, by order of the Vatican, was removed from the shelves and burned along with everyone else on the topic of Planet X. So there is a tremendous amount of suppression. Now, what everyone needs to understand in this situation with the elites is the one thing the elites understand, they cannot prevent awareness. This happens to individuals. One day, you're looking at things and you go, what am I seeing here? You know, when you ask that question, it's like, uh-oh, now you're on the slippery slope to the pursuit of truth. And that's a painful ride. But what they can prevent is consensus. And that's what they don't want. They do not want people coming to agreement on it. What they want to hear is gentlemen just like this caller who's going, I can't trust anybody. That is exactly what they want. That's exactly what they're doing by design. And that, my friend, is the truth of it.
Yeah, I think one of Jeff's thoughts, too, is, you know, it was like the boy who cried wolf. How many times could some of those past people say, hey, it's coming, and then nothing happens?
Well, you know, I have never in the past, and you can go through my work, we've talked about projections.
Yeah. No, this is the most adamant you've ever been.
This is now, because all of this, all of the trends, all of the empirical data that we have been following, it is happening. And we are in the 11th hour, but we're not the only ones. You know, Ed Dames right now, he is putting up a heck of a workshop on exposing the agenda.
He's on next week, by the way.
Yeah, and I actually last month he was in Reno and I attended his class in remote viewing. It was brilliant, and you know I was just so surprised because he's so much in step. In 2004, he produced this kill shot video, and I had that in 2004, and I watched it then, and then I stuck it in the drawer and forgot about it. Well, I was getting ready to go to his, you know, to this class, RV class, and I pulled it out 10 years later, watched the video again, and I was absolutely stunned because when you paint with a broad brush, he's absolutely nailed it. And he has stuff there that is completely consistent with what we're talking about. One of the things I talk about in my book, Being in It for the Species, is that the days of darkness, which is going to happen when Nibiru passes between the Earth and the sun.
Let's talk about that, Marshall, when we come right back and take final calls on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Marshall Masters with us. Your calls as well. Our final segment. Marshall, beyond the work of Zechariah Sitchin, are there other ancient areas where you can pinpoint and say, look what they said about this?
The Colburn Bible. This contains ancient accounts that were written about the same times as the five books of Moses. This was penned by the Egyptians, and they actually have very detailed accounts of the flyby of Planet X the last time. And there's nothing airy about it. It reads like man-on-the-street interviews. And one of the things that the Egyptians tell us is that this provokes so much fear in people that men become impotent, women become infertile. And, you know, you have to think back at then, you know, people didn't live much longer than their 30s. So you're really talking about something so horrific it could scare the sex out of a teenager. And that's not a joke. I mean, that's a real reality. And what they tell us is, you know, when we see this thing, and they describe it very well, you know, hell's coming to visit. Get the guest room ready. It's a long stay. But also they give us hope. One of the things that the Egyptians tell us in the Colburn Bible is the stout-hearted will not go down to destruction. And that has always been one of the most inspirational things for me that came out of that book, and it's what we're doing now and in my efforts. You know, for years we've been talking about this as a dark cloud coming, and yes, it's a dark cloud coming, but for me the conversation now is more about let's find that silver lining. And for me that's community-based planning and preparation, which is most preppers are fear-based, and they want contraptions, and they want confrontation, and that's what they're thinking about. And it's short-sighted, and it's not going to be something that's a winning strategy for a 3 to 7 year, or 7 to 10 year tribulation. On the other hand, my focus right now is working on building communities. We're doing one called Knowledge Mountain Media, and this is what we've started, and I've got a wonderful team. I'd like to shout out and say Jennifer, Paul, Barbara, Ruth, and Leah, I love you guys. And
what does the group do? What do you folks do?
What we're doing is we're building a survival community, but for a very special purpose. What we want to do is combine people who come with radio skills, artists, producers, directors, and so forth, with subject matter experts, gunsmiths, doctors, and so forth. And these are people that are going to really be surviving. Now, there's going to come a time when commercial media goes dark. Cell phones go dark. Everything goes dark. And all that's going to be left are ham radio operators and shortwave. And what we want to do is broadcast survival information at that time, in that environment, that is going to give people, first and foremost, hope, and to let them know they're not alone, to give them knowledge that's practical given what they're going to have on hand, and to do it in an entertainment style. It's always pumping information. So one of the things I'm doing right now is I'm going back and listening to the wire recordings of programs from the 1930s and the Great Depression, and it's really brilliant what they were doing. So what we're talking about is something like Amos and Andy, except instead of a Stutz Bearcat, it's a solar cell or a water pump. And then, you know, you have a daytime soap opera with all the drama of a soap opera, but it's focused around a group of, for example, midwives, and they're talking about difficult delivery issues and these types of things. In other words, it's always pumping useful information, but on the other hand, something that you can just imagine survivors huddled around a radio at night, and they're just hearing things that helps them feel connected, and at the same time, they're getting really important bullet points of information.
This will be the group, Marshall, that has to rebuild the planet, isn't it?
Well, yeah, and, you know, when I look at, we have the dark cloud, but when I see the silver lining, I see human potential. We're at our best when things are at their worst. Now, imagine, George, when there's no longer these massive special interests with their government goons who go in and shut down these really inventive people who come up with ideas that threaten their economic interests. What happens if all of a sudden, all across the country, we have Nikola Teslas popping up everywhere, and there's no one to stop them?
That would be nice. Let's take some calls. Jeff in Culver City, California. Hey, Jeff, go ahead.
Hi, George and Mr. Masters. Yes, Mr. Masters, when you spoke of nuclear facilities needing coolant waters so that the nuclear core doesn't overheat, it made me reflect on how ridiculous it is to build or keep nuclear weapons in a desert. Yet Israel supposedly has nuclear weapons simmering there, and Iran wants, you know, to have nuclear materials in their country. My question is this, Mr. Masters, where are these countries getting so much water from in a virtual desert to cool these materials, and do you foresee other desert nations beginning their own nuclear programs, and will desalinated seawater be the coolant source? And I'll take your answer off the air.
Okay, well, Israel has good desalination programs. Actually, they're very well prepared for Planet X as a nation.
As does Saudi Arabia. They have a great program there, too.
That's right. And so the ones that are scary are the guys like Iran and North Korea, because they just, you know, they want to build bombs and scare the heck out of people. And they're really the ones that are frightening. But I'll tell you who's even more frightening is Pakistan. They're in a huge water dispute with India. And frankly, the Pakistanis have a legitimate grievance.
And they both have nukes.
And yes, and Pakistan has already said that India has crossed the threshold. So this is a real concern where we could have a regional nuclear conflict. And if we think that the missiles are just going to fly between those two nations, you know, that's naive. Wars always wind up spreading. So this is a real concern. But, you know, the nuclear weapons are one thing. To me, the principal threat are all of these power plants. Because
yes,
once they lose the power, they can scram the reactors, but if they don't have the ability to power the pumps to keep cool water going in there for a couple of years while that reactor cools, you're going to have a problem.
Marshall,
have all kinds of problems.
You were talking about Days of Darkness. Explain that.
Yes, Days of Darkness are going to happen at the time of the pole shift. This is an interesting thing where I keep seeing corollaries to Bible prophecy and what actually is coming. The Days of Darkness is going to happen when the Planet X system is beyond our orbit, where Nemesis, the dark star at the core of that system, is really, far out, well beyond the orbit of Mars, and Nibiru is then going to swing by in its orbit as it comes around, and it's going to pass directly between the Earth and the Sun. Now, the reason why that's going to cause the Days of Darkness is that it's not like a solar eclipse with the Sun, with the Moon. This is a massive planet. It is going to literally blot out the Sun. It is going to be be as black as sackcloth, and that is going to be terrifying. But also at that same time, this is part of the pole shift event, and what will happen is that you have these multiple objects. You have Nemesis, Helion, Arbota, Ferrata, the moon of Nibiru, all of these, and they're going to be moving contrary to the orbit of Earth as it's going around the Sun. And when these multiple objects gain a lithosphere lock on our planet, it doesn't matter what you can see or not see in the skies. Everyone is going to feel the Earth tremble when that lithosphere lock happens. We call it Lurch Day. And Lurch Day is actually going to cause the Earth to slow in its spinning. It will come to a stop, and then it will reverse direction, so we will then see the sun rise in the west as opposed to the east. And this is what is coming. So, you know, the days of darkness, when we say the days of darkness, that's it. You know, we're in deep kimchi.
Let's go to Victoria in Seattle, Washington, now west of the Rockies. Hi, Victoria, go ahead.
Hi. Your guest has a fan. I really like everything that he's saying. I have kind of a hard life, but I kind of try to stay very positive.
Good.
What I'd like to say, too, is that I think the silver lining of all of this is just, it's an interesting time to be a Christian. It's really good. And I was going to ask him about the Colburn Bible, but he answered that. I go to a class on Friday night, and we talk about real-time, end-time events. And the very first time I went there, like 4 years ago, I heard about the Colburn Bible and about Planet X and many, many other real-time prophecies and events that are going on as we speak, right?
You got that right. And Victoria, make sure you're listening next week as we talk about end times prophecy, to be sure. But, Marshall, you know, something's happening, obviously. Everybody can feel it. Is it affecting people's psyche, do you think, without them even knowing why?
I think so. I mean, look what's happening to our planet, okay? Our climate is changing. Our oceans are warming. We're on the verge of methane release it's totally catastrophic in that respect. Our planet, surface of our planet, 70% water. Our bodies, approximately 70% water. How is it, if our planet is being perturbed, that we're immune to it? You know, it defies reason. Of course we're being affected, and I think it's part of the insanity that's going on.
Beyond our programs and some of the programs you've been doing, Marshall, are we going to get any mainstream media to report on this, or is it going to be too late?
They're not going to. Well, the mainstream media, I have to be honest. I mean, when I was at CNN, I was a science feature producer. There's no longer a science feature department. Larry King was right. It's the Cartoon News Network. And, you know, what we have is this consolidation in the mainstream media. We don't have, I mean, when I was there, there were 50 different outlets. You had to compete with hard news to get people's attention. They don't have to compete. They're market segmented. They got, you know, MSNBC for ultra-liberals. They got Fox for ultra-conservatives.
Oh, it's all like narrow-casted programming.
Narrow-casted, yeah, and CNN is like, you know, the filling in an Oreo cookie.
Did you work with my old friend who's passed on, John Petrovich, at all at CNN when you were there?
Didn't get a chance. The executive producer I worked with was a great gal by the name of Bailey Barish. And
it's changed.
It was an exciting time. Yeah, yeah, when I was there, it was a lean, mean news machine.
It was a Ted Turner machine.
Yeah, boy, and he was a task driver, I'm telling you.
He knew what he was doing.
It was exciting.
Mark in Minneapolis, welcome to the show. Mark, go ahead.
Yeah, George, Mr. Masters, appreciate your listen. I have to say that normally I'd be kind of skeptical about this with Nibiru and Planet X and everything, but I have to admit that in looking into all this, the Vatican themselves have actually given me reason to be, you know, more of a believer. For one, they created the Vorg, known as the Vatican Observatory Research Group, and invested millions of dollars into an infrared telescope on Mount Graham.
That's right.
In Arizona.
That is so
and
true.
They named it the Lucifer Project.
yeah, and you know what? That thing is it. Well, first off, there's narrow bands across the planet that are ideal for observation, and that observatory is in one of those bands. But here's the kicker. That observatory is going to have the longest duration observation of the Planet X flyby system of any terrestrial system.
Isn't that a great story? The Vatican owns an observatory. I think they have two, but this one is in Arizona. He's right. We talked about that last week.
Yeah, and truly a remarkable story. Their way into a, you know, I mean, it's operated by a university there in Arizona. And how did they shoehorn themselves into that?
Probably money.
Absolutely.
It's the way to go. Roseville, Michigan. Catherine's with us. Catherine, go ahead.
Good morning, George and Marshall. Good
morning.
I have made another question here listening to you. One is this Colburn Bible available at a local library? And also, should we be more concerned with this Planet X coming? Because you had a show before in it, and somebody said it was like 50 years away. Or should we be more concerned with a Third World War that seems to be more imminent? And the other question is, or comment actually, is I'm Catholic and went to a parochial school, and we were taught about the 3 days of darkness. It said 3 days. And that during that time, we were not to go out of the house, and we were to cover our windows and not look out. And even if somebody came to the door saying that they were family, not to open the door, because it would not be family, it would be devils, that the devils would be running loose at that time. So whoever the devils would be, I don't know, but devils. And I wondered if you had ever heard that part of it.
And Marcia, you wrote a foreword for a book on the Colburn Bible, Planet X and the Colburn Bible, but can you get it? Where can you get it anywhere? Go to a bookstore or a library?
You can get it at online at Amazon. You can get it at Colburn.com. Also,
and let's spell it. You better spell it. It's Colbrin, right?
That's right. Okay. Colbrin. If you go to Colbrin or my other sites, yowbooks.com, you can get the ISBN number. And actually, you could also get that number off of Amazon as well. Then what you do is go to your public library. If they don't have it, go to the librarian and request that they carry it. It is available in a hardcover binding. And most libraries will be happy, when they have a patron requesting a specific title, that they'll acquire it and bring it on stock.
If they have budget for it, right? They have to have budget. They have any more money, Marshall? You never know.
Yeah, you know, it's tight. It's really tight now. But you can also, we have it available on Amazon in the Kindle format. And what I would suggest is for those that, this is a very large text. It's the size of the King James Bible. But if you want the elements of it that are just specific to Planet X, Greg Jenner's book is only about $10, Planet X and the Colburn Bible Connection. It connects the Colburn Bible with the Holy Bible and other texts as well, and it really gives you, you know, the whole thing. You can read that in a day, and it's all distilled right down for you.
And the video that Marshall was talking about earlier that was taken by the Sacramento television station is on our website that he sent us at coasttocoastam.com. Amazing. Marshall, you do take care of yourself. Very quickly, though, give out your website, if you would, sir.
YOWUSA.com, and you can also get to it with MarshallMasters.com. That's Marshall with two L's.
And Marshall, of course, was a guest on Beyond Belief. It'll be an upcoming episode, so just make sure you're watching at BeyondBelief.com. Marshall, you did a great job there for us.
Oh, it was a great time, George. It was, you know, sitting across the desk from you face-to-face was just an amazing experience.
You don't think I have a face for radio? It's a joke, Marshall. Thanks. The laugh was priceless. We'll be back more on the planet with a different spin. How about that? That was pretty good. We'll be back.
Sign up now for Coast Zone, our free email newsletter. Get it today at coasttocoastam.com.